Can you hear the music?
Yeah, you bet, man.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you can hear it. I don't know why. Skippy amped.
That's great, man.
Welcome back to another episode of On the Throne with Dick, and shout out to Senjin Boychuk, man, for that incredible intro outro music. I don't think I'm ever gonna get tired of like saying his name and thanking him for it, man. It's been a huge contribution to the podcast, you know. It's just incredible guy. Find him everywhere on the socials at Senjin Boychuk, man. I gotta get him back on the podcast, actually. He's doing some new things, so yeah. And you know, this week on the podcast, I'm really excited. Like, we've never had geologists. Never had someone that, you know, I don't think we've ever had someone that, I don't know. We've never had a geologist. We've never had someone that, you know, I don't know. Is geology a trade? Is it? I don't know.
It's not a trade. It's in the same field as engineering, you know, like we're part of the same organization as engineers. And, you know, I watch a lot of your stuff and some of the other guys on here, and it's a blue collar comedy. And I find myself relating to you guys a lot more than I relate to my engineer partners. So I reached out to you and said, let's try and talk about some of this stuff, about bridging this gap between the white collar guys and the blue collar guys, and especially the field technical staff.
All right. Well, Brandon Turner, man, I've never talked to a... I don't think, okay, that's not true. I talked to a geologist for like the first time ever last night at dinner.
right on.
Yeah.
I probably know them because, you know, I was over at your site for a while there last year. So, or a few years ago. So probably a good chance that I know the geologist you're chatting with.
Yeah. I can't remember her name, but I think she works for GMAC. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Then maybe not. I might be mistaken. I know a lot of the maybe Suncor folks else. And the Syncrude folks and the CNRL folks. So I, you know quite a few of the folks that are up and around the oil sands, but the consulting geologists kind of come and go pretty regularly. And, you know, like that's how I got my start up here is consulting. So it's kind of cool that you get to sit and have dinner with them and chat to them.
Man, I was sitting down with one of the dirt movers there yesterday at dinner, and she sat down and he introduced me, and she's like, yeah, I'm a geologist. And I'm like, wow, I don't think I've ever sat with a geologist before. So that's pretty cool. We got to talking, and she's like, I love your content. So she sees it too. And I'm like, thanks. Nice. I appreciate that. We got talking about the podcast and stuff. And her and I took a picture together. She wanted to take a picture. I thought that was pretty cool. And then, so man, this is my second ever time and second time in as many days talking to a geologist. Dude, this is interesting, man.
What's awesome about that is it's kind of one of the things I wanted to talk about is like how hard it was for me to get into geology. You know, when you're going through school and high school and stuff, like, you know, about the jobs that they try and push people into, you know, doctors, lawyers, engineers. Not once had anyone ever told me that I could look at dirt for a living and make a good career out of it, you know? So it was, it's kind of funny that you say that because I now have, I have a program that I do for grade school that's actually coming to an end. In the third grade, if you remember, if you're from Alberta, we used to do the rocks and minerals unit in the third grade. And I'd go into grade three classes with my rock collection and talk about how to become a geologist and what a geologist does. But the curriculum's changing this year, so I don't get to do that anymore, which is pretty heartbreaking. But you know, trying to expose some more people to the life and the education you need and kind of the career that you can have with it.
Hell yeah, man! This is what we do on the podcast, man. This is exactly what it's all about, you know. Talking to people it's a trade, man. We'll call it a trade. You're here. Yeah. You're with us. You're blue collar, bro. You're right here.
Yeah.
You're doing it. You're doing the damn thing. That's... So, yeah, man, it's to expose all those people, you know, and you know, if anyone listens and they want to become a geologist, right? Like, well, here, this guy, we're talking to you. You're literally going to find out, you know, what you do and how you got there. And, you know, man, that's,
yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, and it's, like, I think what I kind of, like, connected with you the first time there is, you know, I told you I got my start really standing shoulder to shoulder with the roughnecks and the core markers and the motor hands And even the drillers, you know, that's I felt like I connect way more with the blue collar comedy because I was standing outside in minus 40 in a snowstorm, you know, trying to help them do the installs or trying to get core readings or trying to do well developments. And, you know, we're both in the same situation where we're away from home for months on end. The winter is the busy season. You don't get to spend any time at home. We're missing Christmas, birthdays, holidays. We're away from our families, our wives, our, you know, kids, pets.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool that we get to connect the blue collar to white collar here. And yeah, just kind of talk about the similarities and the differences. And the one thing that I kind of say about it is like we have a very symbiotic and parasitic relationship between white collar and blue collar, especially up in the field.
You gotta slow down when you're talking though, because this is a blue collar podcast. My people probably don't know what symbiotic means, bro. You gotta relax here.
Okay. Well, we'll take it down a notch. Let's get into it, I guess, in how the career kind of came to be. But you never learn about geology, right? You kind of know that rocks are everywhere, and if it isn't grown, it's mined. We do know that as well. So how do you find these mineral deposits? How do you find oil sands, oil and gas? You know, we're drilling for helium, we're drilling for lithium. Who discovers that? How do we find it? And a lot of that comes down to the geologists in the world. And when I was going through high school, I kind of got pushing towards the route of engineering. And some of your listeners and certainly a lot of my colleagues understand what APEGA is, which is the Association of Professional Engineers, Geoscientists of Alberta. And I got into engineering school pretty easily out of high school. And I did the first semester and hated it. Couldn't stand it. I went from being one of the smartest people in the room in high school, literally the dumbest person in the classroom. Couldn't stand it. I was not used to failure. So I dropped out, took a few years off, ran a landscaping company, went and ran equipment for a bit. And then decided it's time to go back to school. And I just went to the next letter in APEGA and became a geologist. That was how it worked. That was literally how I became a geologist. So I did 5 years of university to do it. You can finish the degree in 4, but I took 5. So it's a full bachelor's degree. Most people don't find jobs without at least a master's. A bunch of my friends went and got PhDs. So it's kind of weird to think that, you know, you can be a rock doctor and study rocks and depositions for 7-10 years before you ever start really working in the field. And it's I hear on your show before, you know, it's cyclical, oil and gas, and being blue collar, you ride the highs, you struggle through the lows. And being a professional designation in the resource industry, the exact same. I graduated university in 2014, and I'm sure you're well aware how horrible that was. Gas, oil and gas was in the tank. Iron was in the tank. Coal was in the tank. Couldn't find a job to save my life. Had good marks, 3 good internships, great connections. Doesn't matter when nobody's hiring, you know?
Doesn't matter in the downturn at all, no.
So, you know, I kind of struggled through that, did some more equipment operating, some power engineering style work. And, 2018 came about and, I said, I'm done. I'm done struggling through this. I'm not going to look for a job anymore in geoscience, and called up one of my buddies, and he was up north here, and he was one of the general foremen at the site. And, I said, I'm done. I don't think I'll ever find a job in my career path. I want to come back and finish my welding. And he's like, right on, man, let's go fly up next Tuesday. So it was turnaround season. I showed up, started laboring, working towards getting indentured as a welding apprentice. And one of the consulting firms on site here had my resume from 6 months prior, and they finally got around to looking at it. And I got a phone call on my first day home. We were on a 10 and 10 schedule. So I'd just done 10 days as a laborer, welder's helper. And I got a phone call on my cab ride home, and it was one of the consulting firms up here asked me if I wanted a job. And they found out that I was actually working at the site that I got hired at eventually through this consulting firm. So it took giving up and wanting to go back to the trades to finally find a job in this industry. And that was 2018, and been up here ever since. And we talk about long hours and long shifts and rotations, and you pick up the overtime when you can, because you never know when you're going to get it again. You got to work, got to make hay while the sun shines. And I'll tell you, it was, you know, four years as a consultant, I spent a lot of time away from home, but it's a great way to get into it. And, you know, I started working as what they call it, an overburden disposal monitor, construction monitor. And my job was just classifying material types. I drove around the mine. I got to go to the dump areas and test the dirt and tell the operators what kind of dirt it was, what it could get built with, or what you could build with it, sorry. And, you know, I got to play around with some radiation tools, and it was a fun little gig, you know.
And it's pretty badass.
Right? Yeah, it's pretty fun. And it's an underappreciated task, but it helped the mine out. We, you know, you make some decisions and try and keep the material going to the right spot. If you can think about a loaded 797 haul truck holds, you know, 420 tons of material, and if that's ore bearing, you know, bitumen bearing, it could be, you know, $10,000 worth of oil in a truck. So if that's going to the dump instead of going to the crusher, you know, that's part of my job, is to help identify that and send it in the right space. And okay. So I did that for a summer, got some really good connections up this site, and then opportunity came for the drill program. And I know you're familiar with the big rigs, and we definitely don't have the big rigs out here. We've got you know, auger rigs, or little pickup truck mounted auger rigs, and twirly sticks is what we called them. And then we got the, you know, we got the sonic rigs and the mini sonic rigs, and then the TH60s coring rigs, and then the dual rotary rigs for doing some water well work. But like nothing big. It was all pretty small equipment, pretty small footprints, and we were doing some pretty big core programs where, you know, you do 600 or 700 holes in a season combined between drilling through the overburden and then actually collecting the core. And that's really where I fell in love with my career, and that's where I got to hang out with the drillers, the roughnecks. I got to spend a lot of time on the drill floor collecting samples. You know, you really felt like you're part of the crew, right? And I really liked the fact that it was a job that I had to have a shower after I was done work, not before I went to work. You had a really good sense of accomplishment when you were done the day. Your hands hurt, your back hurt, you were sore and tired from standing all day hunched over. You were frozen for half the day, and I'll tell you, I've never been happier. That is the best job I've ever had, is being the rig monitor, and then eventually becoming kind of the supervisor in that throughout the years. And that's where I really, really fell in love with the career path of drilling. And I know that you've worked the big rigs and hauled truck with that. And, you know, I just wondering, like, your take on the consultants or the engineers or the geologists that you'd kind of worked with, or if you'd even worked with any of the white collar, quote unquote, professionals versus the blue collar guys.
So consultants, you would consider white collar?
Oh, I think we might have broke up a little there. I got some bad connection, maybe.
So, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, so would you consider consultants white collar?
Yeah, depending on, I guess, what their background is, like the company men.
Okay.
It's kind of that bridge, right? It's kind of the bridge.
Yeah, I love them. A lot of them, like every time I've been on site or whatnot, like they all follow me. They all... you know, they talked to me about it. I actually was on site today, first day alone on the truck. Actually, you know, the guy that was training me, I've done it before, so he's like, he didn't know what I didn't know, right? So there's like, hey, we're gonna have you train for a few days, right? And then like after 2 days, it's like, well, I know what I'm doing, right? So, but I've been here for 3 or 4 now, and yeah, he's like, hey man, I gotta go do other shit. He's like, I'm gonna leave you here. You're good. You got this. I'm like, all right, cool, man. And I'm sitting there this morning, and a Suncor consultant, or whatever they want to call them, pulls up in his truck. And oh, I saw him. I made eye contact with him. Oh, shit. So I got out, and I'm like, hey, man, how's it going? He's like, Mr. Frost. He's like, I wonder if I'd ever see you. And I'm like, fuck yeah, man, how's it going? And he's like, good, man. Love your content. Love your, listen to the podcast. Love the podcast. You know, like, it's good. And And he brought me a case of water, and he gave me a coffee mug, which is right here. And it was full of coffee. He's like, yeah, the coffee mug is full. It's yours. It's swag, man. Have it. And I filled it up and everything. I was like, oh, damn, dude. Thanks. There's a sticker in there. So I went in my bag and bought him some stickers that I have of mine, right? I'm like, hey, man, here. And he's like, you ever need anything? He's like, here, I'm here. I'm over there, and you come talk to me, right? And I'm like, all right, right? And I thought that was so cool, man. You know, like, so, you know, interacting with consultants, I've been doing that my whole time in the patch, right? But like just in the last 3-4 years doing TikTok, I've been really mingling with them. They all watch me, right? They watch that.
Yeah.
Is this guy going to make a video with logos in it? Is he going to do something I don't like? You know what I mean? And when they realize that, like, hey, I'm not, I don't make videos until the work is done or before there I'm needed, right? I don't fuck around when it comes time to work. I do the work and then I make the video, right? And when they realize that, then it's like, oh, yeah, do what you got to do is keep the logos up. We're cool, right? And it's like, I've gotten pretty good, you know, making a video around a rig and showing the rig, but not showing the logo on the rig. And they love that, man. And it really pays off. You know, a lot of them listen, a lot of them watch and follow, you know, and it's really cool. And yeah, man, I'm pretty proud of that, actually, you know, like that it's been well received. And I actually have a buddy named Gord Kightley that I talked to. He has his own podcast called The Second Act. And he's a consultant, right? So, like, you know, we become good friends. And I started a new segment on the podcast called The Morning Dookie, right? And it's 15 to 20 minutes, roughly, of just, you know, like, just random thoughts and talking and whatnot. And we recorded one today, actually, with him. And he said, you know, I think it's well-received because, you know, the oil and gas industry, the marketing has been piss poor. It's been non-existent, right? And a lot of the, you know, attacks have come against the industry, have come via social media, right? So, you know, they don't like their shit being put on social media because of that. Well, like, are you going to fight fire with fire and let us do this, right? And show like, hey, you know, we're just regular people working a regular job. You know what I mean? We're not evil people. And, you know, so you're going to sit idly by and let them just talk shit and not do anything, get your face pounded in? Or are you going to like let these guys make content and videos and put them out on the internet and fight back? Right? And a lot of them are on board with it. I haven't met too many that aren't. So.
Oh, it's great because like it strikes a funny bone. Every joke you make, it's, you know, we've all been there or seen that. And it's just hilarious the way that you kind of deliver that. And it's, I know there's a couple of buddies in the office there that follow you, and they're going to lose their shit when they see that I'm talking to you. So that'll be pretty fun to see. But yeah. And it's like you said, like you consider a consultant, a white collar, blue collar. And then that got me thinking, it's like, I'm a consultant. Like working in this position. So it's like, yeah, well, I guess I consider myself kind of that white collar. But when we refer to the consultants on the rigs, a lot of times it's just kind of a promotion from the driller position, right? They've kind of came up through the ranks, and then their new title is consultant. So I mean, it's a broad title, right? So yeah, I guess like the consultants that I worked with in the drilling world were all very blue collar, very professional blue collar folks. And then now all the consultants I work with and am a part of are all the like really white collar folks, you know, geotechnical engineers, geologists, civil engineers, mining engineers. And that was kind of the big one that I really noticed working here now in the technical side is we have a lot of mining engineers and a lot of geologists. And our job is very, very close with the mine operations folks. They're, you know, in any given day I'll spend, you know, a couple hours on my phone or on the radio talking to shovel operators, talking to field supervisors, and, you know, sending out as much detail as I can geologically so that I don't confuse them or you know, try and talk over them. But I also have to make sure that I'm getting the point across, and I also have to make sure that it's technical enough that the other geologists don't think I'm an idiot. And I'll be the first to admit that I'm probably the worst geologist on our team in terms of a technical standpoint, but I really pride myself in getting along with the operations guys and being able to speak their language and be approachable and professional, and then being able to kind of interact with them on multiple levels, having operated equipment in the past, being able to understand exactly what they can or cannot do and try not to ask them of the impossible, right? And I think the number one thing that people in the trades really get on engineers' case for is design work. You know, they get these designs or these blueprints and they're insane. Like, they're ludicrous. Nothing could work that way in reality. And with the engineers that I'm working with, you know, they're up here at site, we're doing the rotations and they're out in the field every day and they're making their designs based on practicality. We've actually have a meeting with the kind of the mine superintendent once a week and all the foremen and stuff. And we go through everything to make sure that the design and the plan makes sense for the operations team, you know, and it's like, that's something that you would never get if you had these engineers and these geologists sitting in Calgary and just staring at a computer screen, right? So it's like that interaction between the mine operations, blue collar folks and the technical folks is so important. And then that's where I kind of speak to the symbiotic relationship. We help each other, right? I can't do my job without the tradesmen. The tradesmen can't do their job without the technical staff. And, you know, they could probably figure it out, but whether or not it goes well or it's the safest way to do it probably might not be the case because they don't have all the information that we have access to. And then when I speak about the parasitic relationship is the number one I can say is I'm guilty of this really bad about saying, oh, I drilled these wells or I did this work. And I mean, I was part of the crew that did that work, but I myself was not on the levers. I wasn't throwing pipe or making connections. I sit in the core shack looking at dirt and, you know, at the same token, the drillers or the roughnecks and say, oh, we found oil here. We found lithium here. We did this. And it's, well, you didn't. Somebody in Calgary or somebody else with a lot more technical knowledge told you, it's like, hey, drill a well right here. And that's, you know, it's kind of, it should be maybe the other way around. You know, it's the technical folks have found the oil and the tradesmen have definitely went and got it, but without each other, we could never do either, right? So it's a really cool job to be able to work hand in hand with folks. And I will absolutely admit that I got very little training. It's a tough industry to get hired into, and once you get hired into it, there's not a lot of people to give time to help train. And I was really fortunate that I got paired up with some of the nicest, smartest, most knowledgeable drillers I think Fort McMurray had to offer. And I asked them 10,000 questions. You know, they were probably sick of me asking questions, but I was asking everything to like, what does this do? How do you guys manage this? What's the safest place to be? Like, how much torque does this rig have? What's the difference between drawdown and stroke and, you know, all these different questions. And then it just helped me understand how the rig works. So when I'm asking them questions in the future to do something for me, I understand what they are capable of and what they are not capable of. And I think it kind of goes both ways, right? The really good drillers in turn ask me lots of questions about the materials and the properties of the dirt and kind of the progression of the sequence or the ore versus waste and how was this material deposited. And that's largely what the geologist does, is kind of figure out how material is deposited and what to expect ahead of it, below it, or beside it. And it's kind of fun.
That is badass, dude. So like, okay, so like we're on the same site, right? You're Fort Hills, right?
I was at Fort Hills. I did a 6-month stint at Fort Hills and then I came back to my main site. I'm over at Imperial Curl, so we're neighbors.
Okay, so that's cool, man. So like, what are you, or what have you found in the ground around, you know, these sites besides oil, right? Like besides, you know, bitumen.
Well, one of the big things that I did, and one of the reasons I got hired on at Fort Hills when I had a very short tenure there, was my specialty is sand and gravel. And you might not think about that as being a very important resource. And then you actually stop and think about, well, how much sand is used in drainage and how many loads of gravel are used in building concrete foundations. And then you realize that sand and gravel is probably the most important resource we have readily available to us. And so I worked as an aggregate geologist through my internships, and then became an overburden specialist in some of my training on the rigs. And then right now, part of my job, kind of like an aside to my job, is I do help look for sand and gravel and what we can use it for and where it can go. And at every site up in Fort Mac here, the oil sands, we're very limited in the aggregate resources. Like, they're very, very expensive to truck in. If you have a local source, it's incredibly valuable. And basically, there's only one supplier in the entire region. And when they run out, they run out. So then we have nothing, right? So trying to find that kind of stuff is really, really important. And then we also find clay. Clay is an interesting one because we use it for lining ditches to help prevent erosion and to seal oil bearing material away from the groundwater network. So that's kind of a cool one to look for. And obviously oil is probably the biggest one we're after. And then we also look for limestone primarily on this site. And other sites is we have a formation called the Devonian, and it's limestone bearing material. We use that material for a lot of road construction, and most sites don't have a lot of rights to using the limestone. It's owned by another company in a lot of situations, so we have to pay to mine it ourselves, or we have to pay them to bring it in from another site. But all of our engineered haul roads are built on limestone bases. And so that's a very, very, very valuable resource up here. And one of the things that you've probably heard about, and a lot of people probably heard about in the region, is the dinosaurs, right? We had an ankylosaurus found at, I believe it was at Fort Hills. Shovel operators digging through one of the upper units and saw the outline of an ankylosaurus. And yeah, it was a historical find. You know, it's like a mummified dinosaur sitting in the shovel face. So.
That's cool.
I've never found anything that cool, but I think that was at Fort Hills in, I want to say 2017, 2016.
Wow. That's so cool, yeah. Man.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly, but I know it made the news, and it was a big deal, and that shovel operator got a lot of kudos for it. It was a huge find. Huge find for the region. It was found in the Clearwater Formation, right at the top of the sequence, and yeah. Great, great job with that shovel operator for stopping production and saying, like, hey, this is important. We gotta be careful around this.
Yeah, of course, man. That's badass, man. You know, like, finding something so cool like that, dude. Like, you know, that's what we're here for, right? And man, like, you know, I love this podcast because I learned so much about so many different things, right? Like, I didn't know I would have that much interest in dirt, right? You know, I just like
so
like what you were saying about like aggregate and stuff like that, the Hammerstone quarry,
that's the one I'm referring to. Yeah, I'm trying not to use as many names because I don't know what rules are about different sites and being wow. broadcast, but I think everyone up here is very well aware about the Hammerstone quarry, and every site gets all their it's called alluvial, which is the river rock, and then they all get their limestone from the same quarry. And that brilliant businessman for taking the mineral rights to the Devonian while everyone else is after the McMurray Formation trying to get the oil.
Man, that's cool. Like, because the Hammerstone quarry is right by camp here. I pass it every day, twice a day, right? And it's I was wondering, I'm like, what's the point of that? You're not gonna find oil in there, right?
They're not looking for oil. They're building our roads. Yeah, you bet.
That's badass, man. I like that. That's cool. What else, you know, like, you, so there's a huge difference, right? Because, like, I got my start, I guess, in the oil patch here in Fort McMurray 14 years ago, right? And and then I moved on to other parts. I moved on to Fox Creek and you know, Grand Prairie and stuff like that. And, you know, it's totally different side of the oil field, right? Like, you know, coming back here is like, oof, man, this is a lot different. You know, it's been 10 years since I've been here, man, you know, and like when I left Fort Hills before they were extracting and mining.
Yeah. And like, that's one of the downsides to what I do is, I'm a mining geologist and I focus in, you know, it's the type of deposit I work in, it's called a fluvial deposit, which means it was deposited by a river. And there's not a lot of minerals that are deposited by rivers. It's basically aggregates. So for me to take my skills and my knowledge and move to, you know, the big rigs wouldn't necessarily be helpful. I'd have to do a lot of retraining to learn the different formation types and identify the materials going downhole there. I couldn't move to a coal mine very easily because that's a lot of what they call structural geology, which is how rocks fracture and bend under stress. And then I couldn't go to, you know, lithium mining because I don't have the first clue of what to look for in lithium mining. So I've kind of pigeonholed myself. Don't want to stay working as a kind of a field geologist or a mining geologist. I'm going to have to stay in the oil sands region, which is fine. Like, I think it's a great career path and it fits my lifestyle, but it's not like other oil and gas sectors where you can take your skills and you can transfer them to any other oil and gas sector or location. Same with welders or pipe fitters and even drillers, you know, like the skills that the tradesmen have are a lot more transferable, I would say, than the skills that I've developed over the last 6 years on site here.
Okay. And how old are you?
I was born in 88, so I'm 36.
Oh man, you're like a year older than me. That's cool. When's your birthday?
July. Yeah.
Oh, mine's February. So yeah, you're like a year and a half.
Year and a half older than me. Yeah.
Yeah. No. You were born July 88.
And you're February 89. So yeah, you're 6 months apart. Months.
Yeah. Yeah, man. No, that's
See, I'm bad at math. That's why I'm not an engineer.
You're the same age as my wife is about, yeah.
Yeah, so like we're of the same generation, and I know you've got kids. I don't have any kids. You know, I've got a girlfriend that deserves to be my wife because she puts up with my schedule and my work rotation. And you know, like that's another thing where I think I just relate with you and your content so much is it hurts the people at home. I think it's harder to be the person left at home than it is to be us up at site here because we have such a regimented schedule. You know, you wake up at the same time every day, you go to work at the same time every day, you get to hang out with your buddies. Like it's a lot of fun at work, you know. I get to sit in the cubicle with a couple of other guys. They're just a riot to be with, and everyone I work with is just a delight, and hang out with all the operations guys, and they're fun to bullshit with. And you know, now I'm talking to you, fun to bullshit with you. And you know, the girlfriends, wives and kids, they're at home, you know, and they have no idea what we're up to, and their lives go on, and just because we're away, their lives can't stop. And it's tough to be away from home, but it really does fit the lifestyle. You know, it's a good income, and like I know you're back on the set rotation now, which is kudos, man. That's huge. But I'm on a 14 and 14. I know my schedule. I know when I'm gonna be home. We plan all the big events around my schedule. You know, I miss a few things here and there, like you know, we're both up here working for Thanksgiving. I'll take the overtime day. We can have a turkey when I get home. But it's just nice going home and that's it. You know, I turn my work phone off and I'm 100% present for my friends and family, you know. And I don't know, this is probably your first time back on a set schedule in a while, but how are you feeling about that?
Dude, actually I'm 4 days in and I was talking to my boss today. He's like, man, how you liking it? I'm like, bro, I'm fucking loving it. Cause he knows me from TikTok. Right. So
And
he's like, man, I was a little worried that, you know, you weren't going to like it once you come from Coldstream to this, you know, like it's a little different. And I'm like, bro, are you kidding me? I'm no longer a service hand. I'm not on call 24/7, man. You know, like at 6:30, I am back in my room every night at the same time. I can plan a night or my evening around that. Right. And I got a lock on my door in this camp and I got my own bathroom for Wi-Fi.
You've definitely been roughing it compared to the way that Fort Mac or the oil sands camps are, because I haven't had community showers or bathrooms, I think, ever in my 6 years up here, 6.5 years up here. We've had Jack and Jill's, but I've just just recently I've been invited to stay on the on-site camp on a what they call hotel style. So if somebody takes vacation time, their room becomes available. So I'm on site now, and it's you know, from my room to my desk is about a 7-minute walk. And I tell you, man, it is magic. It is unbelievable. And normally the camp is about a half hour drive away. So I'm counting my blessings. Right. And that's enough time that it'd be really nice to be on camp. And when I was at Fort Hills, I was in Logan, and they were doing the overpass construction, and it was still about a 15-20 minute bus ride just because of COVID rules and limited buses on site. Excuse me. So yeah, it was still a long time, and I was on the on-site camp there. I think it's better now, but that commute in the morning, man, it just adds time to your day. Like, yeah, we work 12-hour shifts, but by the time you figure out your commute and stuff, you're looking at 13 hours. Have something to eat, have a shower, you're at 14 hours. Talk to your wife and kids, you're at 14 and a half, and you got to sleep sometime there, right? So
yep.
It's a busy life up here.
Yeah, man. So the last 7 years I've been in Fox, I'm on call 24/7. I've been, you know, I was either on set 4 hours, 15 hours, or on the 4 hours, right? Like, you know, I there's that. So like, there's a lot of times where I work 200 hours in 2 weeks, right? In a pay period, 200 hours or 170 hours, right? So like, you're doing roughly 100 hours a week. And
yeah.
On top of that, the content, the podcast, to being a husband, being a father, and then sleeping somewhere in there, right? And
I don't know how you do it, man.
Now
I just don't know how you do it.
Now it's easy, man. I'm back at 6:30 every night, and it's like, man, like you and I, I was able to be like, hey, man, let's do a podcast on Saturday night at 8 o'clock, and it was like, yeah, let's do it, and I could comfortably say I would be able to be there. Right, because for the last 7 years, I said, hey, you do a podcast. Well, for the last 2 years, I guess I've been doing it. If you want to do a podcast, you want to do it Saturday. I can say, yeah, let's do it Saturday, but I don't think it'll work. Right. So most of the time, it was like, hey, man, you free? When? Right now. Want to do a podcast? Let's go. And I'm almost at episode 100, man. And we've gotten all this way with living life like, hey, what are you doing in an hour? What are you doing in half an hour? You free? And then, you know, man, we're here, right? And now I can be like, what are you doing Saturday? You know, like,
yeah, we can actually plan it. Yeah,
I think it's great that
I'm loving that we decided to do this while we're both at camp. You know, like, we're about 40 kilometers apart right now. There's 0% chance we could ever meet up because we're, you know, essentially in prison camps. Like, we can't leave. But it's great, right? Like, I guess being closer to town and stuff, and Fort Hills, you could at least go to Fort Mackay if you had your own vehicle, and you could go to the NW and stuff. But over at Curl and Wapasu, man, you are in the middle of nowhere. It's Curl Correctional. There's lots of names for it, but it's over an hour from town, and nobody has trucks. We're all on buses for the most part. So, that's it, right? Like, this is where you live for 14 days.
Well, I don't know about you, if you haven't noticed, but like, you know, that camp Wi-Fi is showing in the video. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
We're spotting on none. Yeah.
I was debating getting off the Wi-Fi and going back to my cell service here, but hopefully it turns out okay on your end, but.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see how it sounds. We'll see how it looks, man. And you know, like, I think it's just, you know, it's the lifestyle, right? And the podcast, blue collar podcast, it's a very blue collar feel. And then it's oil field camp life, man.
Yeah.
I think the service and how it cuts in and out and like that, it just shows what we go through, right? And I think that's perfect, man. You know, like, it doesn't get any better than that.
it's a weird way to look at it, but it's 100% true, you know. And it's When we talk about, like you just said, you're almost at episode 100, and I'm hoping that, I really hope that you can get Micro on here, man. Like, that's the dream. That guy has done so much for the trades and just dirty jobs in general. And, you know, I often thought he should come and sit on a core rig one time and help pull core, because it would be incredible to see that dirty job. But, it is a lifestyle, like you said. And the fact that you're able to do so much in your downtime at camp? Because I know there's lots of days when I get finished work, I don't have a physical job. I sit in a truck and I think, I get the shit kicked out of me driving around the mine. And then, you know, I type a few emails and I get a sore hand from using my mouse and my keyboard. You know, like we all have ergonomic vertical mouses because we're afraid of carpal tunnel. And
here,
you know,
I have to go. I broke this part of my hand a couple of years ago on a vac truck on a combo boom, and the boom was like, there was a delay in the remote to the boom, and what the hell, I pushed it out and it finally connected. And it came down and got my hand between the boom and the railing. And it was -40 outside. So like I was in shock. It hurt. It hurt, but like it was cold. So like I didn't feel much. So I just went back to work. I'm like, well, after a couple minutes of like really swearing and like almost puking a couple times, I went back to work out. And yeah, I went and warmed up in the truck afterwards, and that's when it started to hurt and I hit it. I'm like, you know what, we're just gonna not talk about that. And then the next day I went into work, my boss saw my hand, it was swollen. He's like, you good? You want a day off? I'm like, I'm needing more than a day off for this, but no, we're good. Don't worry about it. And and there's feelings in there for almost a few months afterwards. But like, you know, it's every now and then it starts to hurt a little bit and I could pop it now a little bit, but like it is what it is, man. It's been a few years now, four years just about. Yeah, I think I just started TikTok when that happened, actually. Like I wasn't making them full-time yet. I was like once in a while, but yeah, man, that really hurt. That really did some damage. And you know, like fucking good times, man. So your carpal tunnel from your mouse, man. You know, like I don't even want to know what that's gonna look like in a couple of years.
Well, and that's the funny reality, right? Like I went from swinging a sledgehammer and a chisel on a tube of rock, you know, for 12 hours a day, or trying to split open glacial tills with a chisel, or, and you know, these core tubes are coming out in the splits and they're like 75-85 pounds. So I had a very, very physical job as somebody, you know, like with a degree. And you know, I went from that to sitting in a truck all day, and it's like, oh, this is kind of cushy. And then I start to realize, like, I need to do something with my life, or I'm gonna balloon here. So, like, you're talking about trying to find time to do your TikTok and spend time with the family, and it's, you know, there's days when I just don't have any energy. I don't have any energy, so I'm blown away by the fact that you're able to do so much on your downtime, because it's, you know, back in camp by 6:30 and. I try and go to bed by 9 o'clock every night, you know, and it, some days it works, some days it doesn't. But then I tell you, that alarm goes off at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, whatever time people get it. It's not a lot of time to rest.
No, it's not. Well, I'm doing it, you know, we all have the time. You just got to find the time, right? And the podcast is starting to pay off now. I've got some sponsors and whatnot, and I'm making money at it a little bit. And the content I'm making money at, and other stuff like that. And I think the goal, I've said it out loud a couple of times, but I've never really like come out and been like, this is my end goal, is like, you know, I eventually want to move into, you know, maybe working away less, maybe be finding a job closer to home, maybe be, you know, doing this more full time. And so, you know, like I'm just putting the time in, like anything else, like you have with your geology career, you gotta put that time in where you want to be, right? And like where I am now, where I put time in to get where I'm at and make the money I make. And, you know, so like now I'm putting my time into this to get to where I want to be, right? And yeah, you know, the grass grows where you water it, right? So,
and like that's one of the points I wanted to talk about, is like, you know, for anybody that's interested in coming the technical route, wanting to be a geologist, wanting to be an engineer, is the money isn't there when you start. You have to put your time in. It's a very, very, very competitive field to get jobs with the operators, you know, the Imperial Oils, the Suncors, the CNRLs. It's incredibly, incredibly challenging to get in with those guys. And you have to be, you know, do your internships there and you have to excel. And we had an individual, we had a master's student, and he did his thesis on our project, and, you know, he graduated. There's no job, right? You know, the guy was perfect for any job that we could have had here, but there's no positions open. And unless we wanted to fire one of the guys that was up here already, you know, he's out of luck. And it's so unfortunate because he's a brilliant, brilliant guy, got along with operations perfectly, and finished his masters on the asset, and there's just no work available for him right now. And so he's off consulting somewhere else and putting his time in. But I remember when I started up here, I was making more as a Zamboni driver in Calgary than I was working as a geologist up in Fort McMurray. And I couldn't believe that. You know, I was working at the University of Calgary as a Zamboni driver. I'd been there all through my degree, and shortly after, when I couldn't find a job, and I was making okay money, right? That's a union job, and I'd put my time in there. But to come up north, I had to take a pay cut to be a geologist. Wow. And it was tough to swallow. And, like, you know, I put the time in, and, you know, I moved up the ranks. So I went from, you know, my title was geological engineering technologist when I started. So I wasn't even working as a geologist. And then I got into the position of being a drilling field supervisor. And then I got into the position of being an aggregate lead geologist. Now I'm, you know, a consulting mining geologist. And it takes time. It takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. And the biggest warning I have to people is that it does take time, and you can't be afraid to get dirty, and you can't be afraid to ask questions. You can't think that you're owed anything. You have to take an opportunity, and you have to work your ass off at it. And it does pay off in the long run. I think it pays off in any trade. You know, like, you can't come out of high school and think, hey, I'm going to be a welder, and just assume that you're going to drive a $150,000, $200,000 rig and be making $300,000 a year. You know, you got to go through the process, and it takes time to get good, and it takes time to get recognized. And the more you do and the better you are at it, the better you're going to do. And the harder you work, the luckier you get. Right. So,
yeah.
And I see that with your content, man. Like, you're putting effort in, and it's paying off now.
It sure is, man. It sure is. It's, for a while, I don't know how to keep going, man. There's a side to that whole thing, you know, where, like, you're mingling with other content creators, right? And you're trying to be friends with all these other people, and, like, some of them are there without purpose, right? And, like, they're not in it for the same thing you're in it for. They're in it to cause trouble. They're in it to be, you know, dramatic and start shit and political. I stay away from politics on the internet, but, like, think about the road I've gone down now. I'm making, you know, I've made a couple ads for Carl's Jr. and Original Joe's, and I'm hanging out with, like, I'm rubbing shoulders with some pretty big content creators who have turned this into a full-time thing for them, right? And you know what they say, you know, surround yourself with the people that you want to become, right? So, like, I've done that. I've kind of, like, shifted my crowd around a little bit, but yeah, man, it took a while to get there, you know, it's been a long time, man. It's been a lot of fun. We've had some times where, you know, maybe like this summer, I took a little step back from putting content up. I'm like, you know what, I'll put maybe one out a week. I just need to take a break, right? Just a little mental break, right? And maybe I took the foot off the gas for a little too long, but I took as long as I needed. And then, you know, I'm back now, right? I'm back. I'm posting one or two a day now, here and there, right? And it's like, yeah, I'm finding the fun in it again. I needed to step back to look at the overall picture and then be like, all right, cool. But what happened during that time, I found this summer when I took a bit of a break and I didn't post so much, and I focused a little more on the podcast, and other things that, like Carl Jr. and Original Joe's, that happened through TikTok. You know, I wasn't really even posting that much, and they're just like, hey, you, what's up, man? We see you've been here all this time, right? And I'm like, I haven't really been posting much at all, but sweet, sure, right? And then, you know, podcast sponsors and stuff, and man, like, I took a little step back and people took a little step forward, right? And that was cool.
It is cool. And, like, I actually think back to the first time you and I interacted, you were up by Fox Creek, and you had posted to your story a picture of the ice cream cone. And yep. I'd message you. It's like, fuck, dude, I used to work in that thing. And it was like, you know, that was a couple years ago. And it's just so funny how we're both in the oil and gas industry, and we both traveled all over this province working, and it brought us your content brought us together, right? In terms of just, like, how fucking ridiculous is this ice cream cone in the middle of nowhere? And then when you posted that picture of you flying over Fort Hill, I was like, I recognized it immediately because I helped build the dikes around the tailings pond. And I drilled, or this is me being parasitic again, I was part of the team that drilled all of the instrumentation on the outside edge. And it was just so cool to see that you were flying over Fort Hills. I'm like, man, well, I wonder what Dick's actually up to now. So killer that we've finally been able to actually connect and have a chat, talk about the kind of the relationship between the blue collar and the white collar and the folks that have those white collar designations that are stuck up here in the trenches with you guys, shoulder to shoulder, getting dirty, working away from home, man. Like that's what this is about. You know, it's connecting through this brotherhood that's up here. And I've got lifelong friends. Some of the best friends I've ever had or I'll ever make are from the drilling rig and from the mining sites. And we just have a commonality in like mentality and work hard, play hard. And you know, it's okay to be a little bit rough around the edges.
Oh yeah, man, for sure. I was going to ask you, you were talking about money there earlier. Like, so when you come out of school, what can like a geologist coming out of school in this
Ooh.
Part of it, like you were saying you had to take a pay cut. So like,
yeah, I had to take a pay cut. So yeah, like when I left driving Zamboni, I was making just shy of $70,000 a year. I was making about $34 an hour. And that was with like 7-8 years experience. I was at a high performance facility. I'm sure that like, as part of the union, so the wages were all posted publicly, so I don't mind speaking to that. And when I came up here for the first time, my job offer was $25 an hour with overtime after 8 hours. And you know, that was 2018. I was lucky to have a job. I negotiated slightly higher and I got $27 an hour. That's where I started. And that first winter on the rigs, the roughnecks were making, I believe, $34 an hour. The number of times I threatened my boss to quit and go throw pipe because it paid better was every day. Like it was outrageous how many times I threatened to quit my job because it was just ridiculous that I was out there doing the exact same work and I had $85,000 in student debt to pay off. And yeah. I could have just went through out of the trades. And, you know, kind of circling back on, you know, like getting Mike Rowe involved, like you got to get him on here because he pushes the trades. And if I could go back and do everything again, I would go back and I would finish a Red Seal trade through the RAP program, start doing it at like 16 years old, try and finish by 20. And, you know, I would go and get my class here. I'd go and get my class one as soon as I could, because then you always have that to fall back on. It's a phenomenal career path, high paying, good jobs, great experiences. And then if you so desire to go back to university later in life, you can, and you're building on a foundation of work ethic and drive. And I'll tell you, being a student trying to find jobs, you're looking for 4 months of employment to make as much money as humanly possible. Well, if you have your welding ticket or you have your pipe fitting ticket, or you know, you got your class 3 or your class 1 driver's license, you can go and work 4 months, do the turnaround circuit and make crazy money during your summers. And then you can pay for your university and then you're not in debt. And the reason I took on so much debt is I was told that as a geologist, I would be guaranteed a job and I'd be guaranteed to make $100,000 a year first year out of school. It didn't happen. You know, it was 4 years before I found anything even close. And then it was nowhere near $100,000 a year. And like APEG is really great because they post their salary survey every year. So you can kind of get an idea of what junior geologists can make, senior geologists, like the entire spectrum. You report your salary every year so that APEG kind of has a rough idea. And I believe right now the average salary for a new graduate is in the realm of about $70,000 to $75,000. It's probably as low as 60 and as high as 80. And, you know, it depends on where you end up as a new grad, whether or not you're in the field. Once you're in the field, you do have the opportunity for overtime. And then you also get shift premiums or shift differentials. A lot of companies pay night shift premiums. A lot of companies pay, you know, great overtime rates when you're working stat holidays. And then you also get like site uplift. So you get your base salary, plus you get your site uplift, plus you get your hour uplift, plus you get your overtime for working stat holidays. And then if you work in town, you just get your base salary. So it's pretty lucrative. And I work in a field where, or at a company that doesn't do bonuses. But if you work for somewhere at some of the other companies, you can make 15 to 30% of your wage bonuses, right? So the wages are all over the place. But as a junior geologist, I would say plan to make anywhere between 60 and 70 to start your first year out of school, and then raises every year from there. The more you know how to do, the longer you work, the better you get at your job, the higher you can go. And it's not hard to make well over 100,000 in this industry as a geologist or an engineer.
Fuck yeah, man. That's amazing. Hey, I got a question for you. Do you know what, of course you do. Do you know what viscosity is?
Yeah, viscosity. I've done a few dozen vis cups in my life. So yeah, it's the resistance to flow of a fluid. So, yeah, man, you know.
Thickness, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you bet. So,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, it's like, you know, mixing up the bentonite gel to make your mud and doing the viz cups. Yeah, I've done those with the drillers all the time.
Hell yeah, man. So where I'm going with that is the podcast is sponsored by the Mudman. And the Mudman,
oh, nice.
He deals in viscosity, you know, and he makes like high-tech viz cups and weights and stuff like that. And, you know, the podcast, so he sponsored the podcast, and without him, we wouldn't have had the headset and the mic, you know, to begin with. We're not using it now, because we're recording on the brand new MacBook Pro that he bought me and supplied for the podcast. So yeah, I mean, we're recording on that. And, I'm only using the AirPods because I found with the AirPods, the sound quality is better when the music is playing. And when with the laptop microphone, so like I found that when I don't have the AirPods in, you can't hear me say, can you hear the music when that's on. So that's the only reason why I'm wearing those. But yeah, man, what an incredible guy. You go www.mudmarket.com for all your drilling fluid and laboratory testing equipment needs, man. The Mudman's got your back. He's a solid guy.
That's killer to know, because I still got lots of connections in the drilling world, lots of consultants out there. So I'll throw that out to them and let them know to go check them out.
Yeah, man. Man, the Mudman's like best kind. Best people. You want to be talking to people, like best kind. You know, like, and, nice. You know, and yeah, man, he's done a lot for the podcast. So shout out to that guy. And, you know, yeah, just an overall incredible human being.
Oh, that's awesome. And it's killer for you to get some sponsors, especially industry related sponsors, man. It's just great to see that it, you know,
yeah, man.
You know, people supporting people within the industry.
And a big one for me that I just got, and it's still at this point unofficial. There's a lot of onboarding and we're working on it, but something I'm excited about is, you know, men's mental health or mental health in general is huge in blue collar and working away is we're all going through it. You know, and the podcast is officially sponsored by BetterHelp now, which is so
cool. That's fantastic.
Anyway, man, it'd be that way. I'm so excited to be, you know, being able to give back by, you know, we don't have a code yet, but when we do have a code, 10% off therapy, that's huge, man.
And I think, you know, just got to keep pushing that. It's okay to talk. It's okay to not be okay. Mental health is huge up here. It's desolate. So we're all in this together. And that's great, man. That's great. Keep doing what you're doing, dude.
Hell, man. Hell yeah, man. I'm excited about it, man. I'm excited where this podcast goes. And I'm excited that I get to talk to a dirt nerd. Have you seen that documentary from a couple of years ago about Format? It was called Digging in the Dirt.
No, I haven't. Where's that one at? Is that just on YouTube?
Yeah, you can find it on YouTube, actually. Yeah, man. It's called Digging in the Dirt.
Digging in the Dirt. I've got to check that out. Really, that's going to be good.
They were talking about how, like, you know, if you give, like, they were talking about, like, the impacts and stuff like that. But, you know, a lot of it was bullshit, but a lot of it was really good, right? And, you know, they were talking, like, if you give a kid who's 18 years old and he's already got mental health issues and you put him in the oil patch, you put him away from everything that he loves and put him in, isolate him in a camp somewhere and make him work long hours and put him in these horrible conditions, like winter, like super cold temperatures and shit like that. Then you give him $100,000 a year. What do you think he's going to do?
That's exactly it. And it's not a good spot. And I think that everybody's gotten better about it, and camp life has gotten better. And the industry as a whole has gotten better and more open about the mental health impacts.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. And like, look, you look at the difference. I don't know how long you've been in the patch for, but I've been in it for 12, 13 years, you know? And oh shit. You look at camps back then, there was no Wi-Fi. There was no, you know, they weren't really, the gym was maybe if you had one. Nobody had cell phones, right? You'd be lucky to have a landline in your room, right? And other shit, you know what I mean? And so we were talking about that the other day. My coworker and I, he's like, man, they go all out. He's new to the oil patch, you know. He's like, man, they go all out. I'm like, they have to. And you want to keep your happy workforce is a productive workforce.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, 100%.
I've seen this place fucking 20 years ago, right? Like, nobody was happy, right? Everyone was miserable. You know, lots of drinking, lots of drugs, right? And that's just, a lot of that's gone now, right? A lot of it has been.
It is. It really is gone.
It really is, man. And, you know, or they're better at hiding it, but, like, you know, for the most part, it's gone. And, you know, games rooms, gyms, theaters, ice rinks, basketball courts.
We've got golf simulators, and we've got, I know at one of the CNRL camps I said that they had like musical instruments you could like book. You want to go play guitar, they had like PlayStation 5s set up, they had big screen TVs, foosball tables, pool tables.
Yeah,
we got like a little arcade set up at this camp where we got like the basketball and ski ball and Pac-Man machine and stuff. And it's we actually just did like a team building event for the entire camp, and we called it the Oktoberfest pub night, and they did pizza and wings in the lounge for us. And you know, it's like they're really trying to make it feel more like home. And I do really encourage anybody, whether they're looking to get into the trades or looking to get into a professional field like engineering or geology, look at the oil sands. Like, it's a phenomenal career path, and it's a lot of fun, a lot of hard work, but you're rewarded for it now. You really are.
Yeah, absolutely, buddy. So where was I going to go with that? I don't fucking remember. I had a brain fart there for a minute, you know? Like, yeah, man, the camaraderie and shit like that, you know, if you're looking to get out, fucking, man, you learn, it pays you in more than just money, you know what I mean? Like, the money is what we're here for, but you are repaid and rewarded in more than just currency, you know? And that's
100%.
Jeez, I've learned so much about myself. I've learned how to be a man, you know. I've learned how to, you know, it's been wild. It's been a good time, you know.
Oh, dude, I hope our paths actually get to cross soon, and we can bullshit more about dirt and trucks and life in the patch. And I'm just thrilled, absolutely thrilled that you invited me on here, and we got to talk about everything, my career, and talk about your career and your new job. And you know, I'm hoping with what you're doing over in Fort Hills, we'll catch up some other time here, and maybe we'll talk with the people we know together, and get together for a beer off site on days off.
Yeah, man. Speaking of which, that's where I was going to ask. Where I was going to go with it and ask. You interact with shovel operators, eh?
Every day, you betcha. That's my primary job.
Ask some of them, go and talk to a couple shovel operators and some heavy haulers. Ask them if they're interested in coming on my podcast, man. I'd love to have a heavy hauler and a shovel operator.
Well, for sure. I mean, one of the unique things about our site is we don't have haul truck drivers. 100% autonomous. It's all robots.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
So
anyway? Let's talk about that. How is that?
I can't talk about it too much. It's pretty well known that the Imperial Oil site is all autonomous. It's been on the news time and time again. The one thing that I can say without hesitation is I love it. It is the safest way to operate in the mine. As a person who drives a light vehicle in the mine, there is zero confusion. There is zero doubt. I can see exactly where those trucks are going to go. I can tell exactly when those trucks are going to go. They have so many safety features programmed into them that there's 0%, near 0% chance that I could ever run into trouble with them. They predict where I'm going to go because I have the same GPS units in my truck. I'm logged into the same system they are. So they can see me. I can see them on the software side. They can predict where my pickup's going to be, and they will stop dead if there's ever a chance that I could interact with them. Their default setting is dead stop. And, you know, it's, for me, in a light vehicle, it's the safest way to operate a mine. I do hear some people complain that it's slower than the staff trucks. And I also know that they tend to not make the right decisions in challenging conditions. But it's huge. It's huge for safety to have the autonomous trucks.
Oh, that's interesting. That's actually, that's, man, I at first, you know, I'm kind of against it a little bit, right? Because of the whole, like, I'm very, hey, man, you put people out of work, right? But like,
but we don't. That's the trick.
No,
we, to run the haul trucks, you need more support equipment. So we have more graders, we have more dozers, we have people in light vehicles that we call recovery teams, where if one of the autonomous trucks gets stuck, we have to send a person down there to turn it into manual mode and get it out. And as far as I know, not one person lost their job to the autonomous system. In fact, we probably hired extras because the road conditions needed to be improved on.
Well, shit. Look at that. You know what? This is why we're talking about it, you know, because, yeah, you know, hey, you put me in my spot. There you go. You learn something new every day, man. That's pretty badass.
Yeah, but I'll reach out to a couple of the shovel operators that I know. There's you know, I know there's one of the guys I'm pretty close with. He builds race cars, and he's down south somewhere, and I think he'd love to talk to you.
Man, what's up? Come on, man. I'd love that. I would. That's something I would love to have on, man. That'd be cool.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, he's on night shift right now, but when I see him in November there, I'll bring it up with him.
All right, buddy. Hey, one last question. I'll let you go there. I don't want to keep you too late. We all know, like, you know, like you said, with my new schedule, I know I'm exactly back at 6:30 every morning or every night. But I'm also up at fucking 4:45 every day and have to be out the door by 20 after. Right.
You're an animal.
But buddy, that's kicking my ass a little bit is what it's doing, right? But like, I'm back at 6:30, and that's all I'm happy. I'm on straight days. That's, you know, I'm happy. We're good. We're Gucci. But you know, so I don't want to keep you too much longer. But you know, I usually wrap the show up with one last question, and it's, you know, Mount Rushmore has four of the most influential people on the Rock, and if you could have your own Mount Rushmore with four people that you look up to, inspire to be there, or that inspire you, who would they be and why?
The first person would have to be my grandpa. You know, he passed away when I was younger, but he was the one that told me, he was the one that got me interested in welding, and he was the one that told me I was too fucking smart to be a welder, so go to school. And he would have been, you know, churning in his urn to find out that I quit geology to go be a welder, only to quit welding to come back to be a geologist. So he'd be first and foremost the person on that. And then I'd really like to put my mentor. He was a general manager at Suncor, but I met him in my first ever internship at the Alberta Geological Survey, a man by the name of Sean Slattery. Really made me the geologist I am, trained the ever-living shit out of me, told me that geologists, most people don't want to be in the field. It's a dying breed. It's a dying profession. You stay being a field geologist, you're always going to have work, and you're always going to enjoy your work. So he's probably number two. Oh God. Third person on there. You know, got to go with somebody like Bobby Orr, you know, just a legend, you know, who wouldn't want to be Bobby Orr? And, fuck it, you, man, let's put you up there. You know, you're working your ass off. You're making content, you're making videos, you're making people laugh. It's great to see, you know, I love you bringing the fact that you bring things to, the light about the oil patch. You bring the funny side to it. You put a good spin on everything, and you know, people are going to see this and tell me I'm just kissing your ass, and sure, why not? But, no, dude, people like you, not you specifically. How's that? People like you.
All right. That's better. I like that, man. I appreciate it. Thanks, man. I really appreciate that. I love that. That's huge, man. And you know, you show me, you know, four people that you look up to or you know, that you value in your life, man. And that tells you a lot about the person, you know. So that's, you know, that's huge.
Yeah, man. That's it. That's
making videos here in the next day or so about I'm gonna find a good sound, and then I'm gonna pick a rock and be like, you know, something sarcastic about the geologist now, you know, like it's coming.
Yeah, you bet. And I guess like one more, like the last thing from my side is like, if any of your listeners ever want to chat about being a geologist, reach out to me on Instagram or LinkedIn. They can find me. I'm easy to find. I've got a very, very, very common or very, sorry, unique last name. So easy to find. Anybody that's on site wants to talk to me, come to reach out. You know, I'm always happy to talk about dirt. I love mentoring. I love teaching. So happy to do it.
Hell yeah, man. That's huge. And that's good to have people, you know, I'm glad I have someone that came on that's more than willing to be like, hey, if you want to learn about this, I'm here. You know, not someone that's like, I'm sure you can find someone that's willing to teach you, you know, and that's good, man. Like, you know, it's the kind of people that I'm happy to talk to and have on. So.
Yeah, right on, man. Well, it's definitely past our bedtime. So thanks so much for having me, man. And it's been a riot.
Yeah, man. Thanks for coming on, buddy. And hey, Brandon, stay frosty, bro.
Yeah, stay frosty.